Anybody need?
There are some more in the copy machine, I think. In the machine. Thank you, Rabbi Rice. Thank you, Mrs. Kamenetsky. I want to echo Mrs. Kamenetsky. Thank Rabbi Rice for getting us out of the kitchen for a little bit. It's good to have all the different types of hachana for Yom Tov, and to be reminded of the reason why we're going to perhaps to such lengths in the kitchen. It's really not all about the food. It's much deeper than that. So last year we used numbers as a vehicle to find meaning in the retelling of the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So if those of you who were here last year, remember we discussed particularly number 4, which is extremely significant in the Seder, and also made reference to 3, 15 different numbers that recur and explore different meanings behind the numbers. So this year we're going to focus on personalities as a vehicle to find meaning. And there are several distinct personalities who appear not just once, but a couple times over in the Haggadah. And that's going to be the focus of our discussion. Again, looking for trying to understand the meaning behind the hashkafa of those particular individuals. So we find in the Haggadah a certain inherent tension between two mandates. The first is at the end of Avadim Hayinu, we are told, Mitzvah aleinu lesaper b'yitziat Mitzrayim, and kol hamarbe lesaper harei zeh meshubach. The more we talk about Yitziat Mitzrayim, the more praiseworthy we are. On the other hand, later in the Haggadah, we have the teaching of Rabban Gamliel, that essentially, the essential obligation of the evening is to discuss 3 things: Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. And if we don't do that, we have not been Yotzei Yedei Chovateinu. And that, minimally, that's really all we have to discuss. So this leaves us with a certain conundrum. There is a certain disagreement in terms of what we're really sitting at the Seder in order to accomplish. What are we there to do? So we're going to look first at the paradigm that's cited by the Baal HaGadah for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. What is the exemplar of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim? The Seder in Bnei Brak of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That's, you have it on the sheet. Ma'aseb Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon. Shayu misubin b'Bnei Brak. They were reclining at the Seder in Bnei Brak. So this is the exemplar of Kolam Marbeh HaRezeh Meshubach. Ad shebau talmidehem ve'amru lahem raboteinu higi hazman kriyat shema shel shacharit. Until their students came in the morning and said, it's time to stop because it's already time for shacharit. They went on so long, they just kept going and going and going until the next morning and didn't even recognize that they were so engrossed in telling the story that they didn't even realize time had passed, so much time had passed, and their students had to come and remind them, it's time for Shacharit. And then appended to that story, which has no parallel in Talmudic literature, there is a Mishnah from Masachet Brachot that is brought, Ama Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Hare ani kiven shivim shana, I'm as if 70 years old, I'm about 70 years old, Lo zachiti sheteyamer yitziat Mitzrayim balilot, I never merited that Yitziat Mitzrayim should be said at night, and that's a little bit open to interpretation, never merited to understand why Yitziat Mitzrayim should be said at night, or whether it's a mitzvah to be said at night. Ad shedrasha ben Zoma, until Ben Zoma came along and explained, shenemar leman tizkor yom tzeitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha, given the principle that there are no extra words in the Torah, it could have just said, remember the day that you left Mitzrayim every day of your life, or daily. The word kol seems to be a little unnecessary. So yemei chayecha hayamim, from the phrase yemei chayecha, the days of your lives, we learn to say it during the day. Kol yemei chayecha includes the nights. Chachamim disagreed with Ben Zoma and said yemei chayecha refers to ha'olam hazeh, Kol Yemei Chayecha comes to include Lahavi Limot HaMashiach. We're going to focus first on the, since we're really focusing on the personalities, let's look at the first grouping. So several questions arise. First of all, when did the Seder take place? Why are these particular Chachamim gathered together in Bnei Brak specifically to celebrate the Seder? There is a missing personality here. If we are familiar sort of with the sort of Chabura of these Tanaim, Rabban Gamliel is generally included among them. If you have this group, we'll see them again a little bit later. Many people are familiar with the Gemara, famous Gemara at the end of Masachet Makot, where the Chachamim were walking together, traveling together, and encounter saw a group of foxes playing on Har HaBayit before that they heard from a great distance Roman legions celebrating. And the Chachamim traveling together included among them Rabban Gamliel. And that's just one example of many places in the Gemara and in the Mishnah and the Gemara where he is included with these Chachamim. So we want to understand, why is Rabban Gamliel missing from this particular Seder? What is the significance of the reminder of the students, Higia Azman Kriyat Shema Shel Shachari? And lastly, why is the Mishnah from Masechet Brachot appended to this story? The Mishnah is really discussing our daily obligation to remember Yetziat Mitzrayim, Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is not the same as the obligation of the Seder night, on which we're told we must tell the story. Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is not the same thing as Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. For the daily Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim, a few words will suffice. The night of the Seder, we're supposed to sit and tell at length the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim with all of its attendant details and explanations. Addressing the question of when the story took place, the Chatam Sofer explains that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a child at the time of the Chorban. And he takes Hareyani Kiven Shivim Shana, literally, I'm around 70 years old. Therefore, he says, this Seder must have taken place around 70 years after the Chorban. So, on the sixth line, at the end of the line, he begins, V'rov ha'am hayu mitzapim achar shivim lechorban bayit sheni yibanek mo habayit harishon. Many people expected that 70 years after the Chorban, another Beit HaMikdash would be rebuilt, just like the 70-year galut that took place after the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And you can imagine, this is still a generation among whom there are people who saw the Beit HaMikdash standing, and who saw it burning, and who had this tremendous sense of loss without the Beit HaMikdash, and had not really yet begun to function smoothly as a national body, because they're still suffering terrible persecutions under the Romans, without the Beit HaMikdash. So there was a tremendous sense of hope that the Beit HaMikdash would be rebuilt. And now, it's about 70 years that have passed. There's no sign of the Beit HaMikdash being rebuilt. It doesn't seem like there's any hope of that happening anymore. It's not a realistic hope. So, Kishelo Nivna, Be'avonotenu Harabim, Yashumi Amash. When they saw that because of our terrible sins, and our many sins, they really despaired. And it felt like, that's it. Now it's really, there's no hope. How do we go forward? All these 70 years, we thought we could go forward because we had that vision that, okay, 70-year galut, we've done it before, we could do it again. But if these 70 years are passing and there doesn't seem to be any realistic hope of building the Beit HaMikdash, how do we now go on? And there was a tremendous sense of national despair. Lulei chachmei hador, hayu mechazkim libam le'emuna. If not for the chachmei hador, who were mechazek their emuna, who said to them, no, we do still have to go on. We can still go on. So there is a sense that there was a need for this particular gathering at that particular time. And most of the Mefarshim do agree that this Seder took place sometime after the Chorban and prior to the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. In fact, some suggest that the purpose of the gathering was to plan the rebellion of Bar Kokhba against the Romans, and some say that's why Rabban Gamliel wasn't there, because, and we'll see in the sources, that Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, and his presence would have attracted too much attention, so therefore he stayed home, and he allowed the others to gather under the leadership of Rabbi Akiva in his town of Bnei Brak, to plan the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. The reason they give for this, first of all, the location, they were in the home of Rabbi Akiva, who was the Rav in Bnei Brak. And had it been before the Chorban, they would have been in Yerushalayim, bringing Korban Pesach. Had it been after the rebellion of Bar Kochba, when Rabbi Akiva was still around to celebrate a Seder with his peers, then the Seder would have been taking place in Beitar, which is, that was the capital of Rabbi Akiva's rebellion. Why they're in Bnei Brak and why they're not at home is actually intensified by two sources that are a little bit interesting to look at. The first one is just a list of, source number two, you have just the Gemara lists the different cities in which each of these rabbis officiated. And in the second source, you have Rabbi Eliezer, who is mentioned as present at this Seder in Bnei Brak, and Rabbi Eliezer, Shehaya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and the Shehaya means that this is something that he said frequently. It's not something that he said once. It's like in Pirkei Avot when you have Hu Haya Omer. You know, this is the kind of thing that he used to say this often. This was his teaching. He would say, Mishabeach ani et ha'atzlanin she'ein yotzin mi batehen baregel dichtiv esamachta ata uveitecha. He says, I praise those who appear to others to be lazy because they stay home for Yantif. They don't go visit their Rav. It was the context there is a different Rav who, a Talmud who didn't, who came to his Rav, and he kind of said, what are you doing here? And he says, I myself praise those who appear to be lazy, and other people might think, oh, why didn't they get up and go visit their Rebbe on Pesach? He said, no, I really think people should stay home, because the Pasuk says, v'samachta ata ubeitecha, that you and your household, and you should be home with your family on Pesach. So if that's his feeling, and it's something, shehaya omer, this is something he said on a regular basis, what's he doing in Rabbi Akiva's house? In terms of those who are assembled there, Rav Soloveitchik took note of the fact that the gathering represents the process of the Mesorah. And that is intrinsic to the Pesach Seder. Rabbi Tarfon is Rabbi Akiva's teacher, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was a student of Rabbi Akiva. So just like we said, it's so nice to have here, really, that's an echo of the same thing. We have in our homes multiple generations of one family. We're also a family in a sense, and we have many, Baruch Hashem, generations of teachers and students sitting here. So too, at the Seder in Bnei Brak, we had generations of teachers and students, and Rav Soloveitchik says this shows us that the preoccupation of these chachamim and the reason that they absented themselves from their homes, which is really where they would have preferred to be on Pesach night, and gathered together in the home of Rabbi Akiva, was that their primary concern was preserving the Mesorah under the persecution of the Romans. It was very hard to teach Torah in those days. It was really at the threat of one's life. So the fact that they were gathered together in order to teach Torah shows their commitment to maintaining the integrity of the Mesorah. And they wanted to show that it's so important, we're even going to do something we wouldn't normally do, break our normal patterns in order to preserve this Mesorah. Another suggestion as to why the Seder took place in Bnei Brak. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon explains that we know that at this time the Romans were pursuing Rabbi Eliezer in Lod. There are Roman legions posted in the towns of Rabbi Yoshua and in Sipori, where the Sanhedrin had also met occasionally, and he suggests that this is why Rabbi Gamliel is not here, because he's the Nasi. And in Bnei Brak, they hadn't closed in yet on Bnei Brak, and that was a relatively safe location. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein, who is the author of the Aruch HaShulchan, in his Haggadah Leil Shimurim, offers another explanation as to why these Chachamim broke with their normal protocol and spent Pesach with Rabbi Akiva, specifically. And this has to do with the Gemara and Makot, that when they were walking together with Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Rabbi Yoshua, and they heard Roman legions celebrating from a great distance, and the other Chachamim started crying, and Rabbi Akiva started laughing, and they said to him, and he said to them, why are you crying? He said, but the Roman legions are celebrating, and the city's going up in flames, and we shouldn't cry. And Rabbi Akiva said, that's why I'm laughing, because if this is the schar of those who don't serve Hashem, imagine, alachat kama v'chama, what our reward is going to be, ultimately. And the second episode of when they were walking and saw foxes playing on Har HaBayit, and again, the other rabbis began to cry, and Rabbi Akiva began to laugh, and he was able to console the others with his reasoning that if the nevuah of the Churban has come true, then this is just proof that all the other nevuot of Nechama, which bode even better and greater rewards for the Jewish people, will also come true. And they responded with, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva, you have consoled us. So says Rabbi Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein, in the Haggadah Leil Shimurim, this is why they came to the house of Rabbi Akiva. Lachein ani omer, sheba'ad zeh hechziku tova l'Rabbi Akiva. They showed hakaras atov to Rabbi Akiva. Al shechizkan bechezkat klal Yisrael techaf achar achurban. He was the one who energized them following the Churban, that there is hope for the future. V'lachein ba'u kulam li'iro u'l'beito shel Rabbi Akiva, levad Rabban Gamliel, lo halach mipnei sheya nasi. Again, Rabban Gamliel didn't go because he's the nasi. He doesn't explain what the ramifications of his being the nasi might be and how that relates here, but he's the nasi, so he doesn't go. But the rest of them came to Rabbi Akiva, v'kulam ba'u elav, l'saper b'yitziya mitzrayim b'leil chag ha-pesach, mipnei shemiyitziya mitzrayim gam kein mitbarer nitzchiyu Yisrael. From telling the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, they're going to get more of the same kind of chizuk that Rabbi Akiva was giving them. We know, we learn about the eternity of Klal Yisrael. We learn at the on the night of Pesach, Shekol Kli Yotzer Alav Lo Yitzlach L'Chaloto Chas V'Shalom. Right? In every generation, V'chol Dor Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloteinu V'Akadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Miyadam. And that's the message of Rabbi Akiva. They're never going to succeed against us, no matter how hard they try. And they were going on and on and on with this idea. They were drawing so much strength from Rabbi Akiva and his teachings and his hashkafa, his whole outlook, that there's a nitzchiyut to Klal Yisrael. We are an eternal people. Finally, the students came in and said, Rabboteinu, higi azman kriyat shma shel shachari. V'zehu gam kein la'ameitz birkayim koshlot. There's what in shachari that can also strengthen our knees when they feel like they're buckling under us. Debekriyat shema shel shacharit anu amrim gam kein ezrat avoteinu magenu moshiyah livnehem achareihem b'chol dor ador. There are many phrases that we say in the bracha between kriyat shema and shmona esrei of shacharit that will strengthen us in the same way. So it's okay. We can let go of the seder, and we can move on and take this same hope and this same nechama into our daily lives. We're energized by the Seder, but we can take it forward and find expressions for that same inspiration in our daily lives. Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lissa, who's the Baal HaNetzivot, in his Haggadah Ma'aseh Nisim, further develops the idea that these Chachamim were seeking inspiration in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim to apply to their own circumstances. And he explains on this Ma'aseh, Ein safek, shelo hayashum sipur hayitziya levad. There's no question that they were discussing more than just the story of what happened. Ki laze af sha'a achat hilamotar. His opinion is you can actually tell the story of Yitziyah Mitzrayim very briefly. You can tell it if you want to tell it. You could in less than an hour. And there are people who conduct a Seder, I don't know how, in less than an hour, on with the story. And, you know, let's get to the food. But so for this, just the bare bones of the story, you don't need a lot of time. However, what's going on here? Rak al kach shehim darshu v'chakru. They're sitting there and they're investigating and looking into, reading into. Al kol pratu prat. They're going through dayenu, right? Every single detail of what happened in Yitziat Mitzrayim. Eizet sorech tova hayabo lahem. They're looking at Yitziat Mitzrayim as a paradigm for all future experiences of Galut and Geula. What message is there? For every detail that they identified in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, they sought to find inspiration. How can I learn something from that towards my situation today, or our situation today? V'heyach shehayat sofet umabit batova hahi, and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking into every good that could come from each detail of what happened then. Sheyeh koach batova hahi, that there should be the potential within every detail of the good that Hashem did for us as a nation on that night. Lehetiv ad sof kol hadorot, that from that koach should emanate and should be realized geula for all future generations. good things for all future generations. Ad shenomar al kol tova v'tova mitovotav ki lo olam chasdo. To the point that we're brought to the point of hakarat hatov for every single detail of what happened to us. It's up to every individual to identify his or her personal experience of this national story. For the most part, the Haggadah tells a story of a nation, of a people. And this Seder in Bnei Brak is a little bit different because it tells the story of a group of individuals. How do these individuals inform our national experience? And how can we relate on a personal and individual level to a Seder that took place almost 2,000 years ago, such that it occupies a central place in our telling of the Haggadah? Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher offers one suggestion in his one word, Haggadat Eretz Yisraelit. And he says that, he, based on the idea, Kol Yimei Chayecha includes L'rabot HaLeilot. Leilot is often used to as a euphemism for galut, right? We live in the night of our galut, in the darkness of our exile. So gam bizman galutenu hadomel laila badorot ha'afelim biyoter, even in the darkest moments of our history, bayamim asher hachoshech yichase et kol ofkenu misaviv, the darkness covers the entire horizon, we can't even see a glimmer of light. Mitzvah aleinu lizkor yitziat Mitzrayim. Even under those circumstances, it's a mitzvah to remember yitziat Mitzrayim. Actually, I was just reading about a few short weeks ago, a very special woman was Nifteret, Mrs. Pearl Benish. I don't know if anybody is familiar with her. She was the last living Talmidah of Sarah Schneer, the author of the definitive biography on Sarah Schneer, Carry Me in Your Heart. She also wrote a memoir of her time in the Shoah. And I reread it after the Shabbos that she was Nifteret. Sorry?
To vanquish the dragon,
yes. And she speaks of observing Pesach even under the most extreme circumstances in the Shoah, that she and her peers, the students of Sarah Schneer, did not eat chametz on Pesach. Not that it was required of them at that time under those circumstances, but they refrained from eating chametz on Pesach, which was an amazing thing under those circumstances. They felt that they needed to observe Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim in that way. Shenihyeh botchim b'Hashem u'mekavim la'geula. And this observance of Pesach should remind us that we of our emunah, of our bitachon in Hashem, and we are moving closer to the geula. And says Rav Kasher, v'chein kol yachid, it is incumbent upon every individual, tzarich lizkor shibud Mitzrayim v'hageula mimenu, hein bayom, whether in the good times, b'sha'ah she'shemesh ha'hatzlacha zorachat lo, whether his personal experiences are good, the sun is shining on him, life is good, everything's, you know, things are going well for me, I still have to remember Yetziat Mitzrayim. Sometimes we don't recognize the good. When everything's good, it's just good. And we take it for granted. You have to recognize it then. Hein balayla, b'sha'ah she'olamo chashach ba'ado. Even if one's personal circumstances, my world is dark right now, I'm facing extreme challenges. Nevertheless, b'chol hazmanim yizkor ge'ulat Mitzrayim, we have to remember ge'ulat Mitzrayim, v'yirvachlo, there's going to be revach from that. We are going to benefit. If we can remember Yitziat Mitzrayim, we will personally benefit from it and be able to apply it to our own circumstances. The Sachet Shavarav, in his Haggadah Shemi Shmuel, offers another beautiful insight, and Mrs. Kamenetsky alluded to this as well. Shekol elu hachachamim, this ma'aseh of the five zakenim who were sitting in Bnei Brak and telling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim until their students came in and said, Higiyazman kriyat shma shel shacharit. What were they doing there? So again, they're examining every single detail of the Seder. And the second of the wider lines, Shekol elu hachachamim hisigu hasagot achar hasagot. They reached incredible levels of insight into the story of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim that night. V'sof hakol, but bottom line, shenisharu be'emunah b'mashal lemala mehasagotehem. As much as they achieved, as they reached these incredible levels of insight and understanding, there was a point where they reached, they said, we can go no further. There's a limit to human intelligence, there's a limit to what we can understand of what happened there. V'zehu kriyat shmashal shacharit. And that's what Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit is all about. When the students came in, they came in and they said, Rabotenu, higiyaz man Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit. There reaches a point where you have to stop this. You have to stop the intellectual discussion and get in touch with your deep, heartfelt emuna that lies at the rock bottom of what Yiddishkeit is all about. Shehu emuna b'Hashem echad. You have to just stand there and be mekabel ol machot shamayim. She'ein koach b'seichel enoshi lahasigo. And we have to understand that we really can't understand fully what Hashem is all about. And there's a story of a din Torah that took place in Auschwitz. Elie Wiesel told the story. It was then later dramatized and it was written up as a book and as a play and as a, I think it became a movie. And the movie definitely plays with the truth a little bit, but Elie Wiesel said that the story actually occurred and he was a witness to it. In Auschwitz, one night, they called HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a din Torah. And I think the movie is called God on Trial. Not necessarily saying you should go watch it, but the movie is called God on Trial. And under the worst possible circumstances, they brought forward witnesses, one by one. Every individual in the barracks stood up and said, this is what I saw in my hometown. This is what happened to my mother, my sister, my brothers. This is what happened to me. And they held God accountable. And this was going on all night, one after another, testimony after testimony. And finally, they reached the last witness. There was no one else to tell their story. The Din Torah convened. They spoke to one another and agreed, okay, we've arrived at a decision. We find God guilty of the terrible persecution of the Jewish people, of all the deaths that we've heard, of all the victimization that we've been hearing about tonight. God is guilty. Silence. And a minute later, there's a clap. Rabbeisai! Shachris! Because there's a point we may not understand. From our perspective, it looks like terrible things are happening. God is guilty. We don't understand. Kabbalah's ol machlo shamayim. We accept it. We accept it with love. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us back and that there's a nitzchiyut to the Jewish people, that we will continue to survive. Our hashkafa is the hashkafa of Rabbi Akiva. Erica Brown offers a beautiful insight in her Haggadah into the exclamation of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that explains why this particular Mishnah might be appended to the story of the Seder in Bnei Brak, even though it doesn't seem to have direct bearing on the Seder as much as on our daily recitation of Kriyat Shema. And I'm not going to read through the whole thing, it's in English, but she talks about how Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is one of the elder sages, and he is quoting Ben Zoma, who was a younger contemporary, with excitement. I never understood, and all of a sudden, now I understand. And that's the excitement that we need to bring to our Seder, where we hold on to our quest for deeper understanding, and we enthusiastically embrace the teachings offered by those even younger than ourselves. Sometimes our younger siblings, our children come in with a beautiful insight, and our quest for knowledge and understanding of the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim has to stay with us and remain fresh and exciting so that when those insights are offered, we can feel that sense of, yes, now I understand something that I really wondered about my whole life. And not be afraid to ask the questions and hear the answers from those whom, even from whom we might not expect, would be giving us answers. Coming back to Rabban Gamliel, we've offered one explanation for the absence, for his absence at this Seder, but there is another avenue of thought that's very interesting and warrants our attention, and also explains the citation of Rabban Gamliel's teaching later in the Haggadah, which we mentioned earlier, basically three fundamental obligations at the Seder, and that's really what the Seder is all about. Rabban Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu ba-pesach, lo yatza yidei chavato, ve'elu hein pesach matzo mara. We have to have pesach matzo mara. So again, the language of haya omer, Rabban Gamliel haya omer, this was something that he stood by. It wasn't something he said once, it was something he was accustomed to say. So we've mentioned that perhaps he didn't join the Seder because he was the Nasi. Another approach is that perhaps he didn't join the Seder in Bnei Brak because he fundamentally disagreed with them in terms of what the essence, what the essential avoda of the Seder is really all about. So interestingly, there's no parallel source in Talmudic literature for that piece, Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, of that Seder in Bnei Brak, there is a somewhat parallel source in the Tosefta, Ma'aseh b'Rabban Gamliel u'Zakenin. There is an episode that occurred with Rabban Gamliel and a group of unnamed zakenim, shahayu misubin bevet baitos benzonin belod, who were having a seder in the home of somebody we don't really recognize, baitos benzonin, in the city of Lod, so separate from Rabbi Akiva. Vehayu oskin behilchot ha-pesach kol halayla ad krot ha-gever, so also all night, but not telling the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, discussing Hilchot HaPesach, the halachot of the Korban Pesach, until the rooster crowed, and then he'd be home with Nehem, they lifted the table, moved it out of the way, v'no'adzu v'halchu lehen lebeit hamidrash, and they all got together and they walked to shul to daven. So there is some evidence that you have in sources 9 and 10, that Rabban Gamliel continued to offer the Korban Pesach even after the Korban. There was a period of time before the rebellion of Bar Kokhba when the Beit HaMikdash had been destroyed but the Mizbeach was still standing. So it's a little bit parallel if you want to think in terms of parallels between then and now. Not everybody knows, but there was a period of time in 1948 before the Churva Shul was completely destroyed. It was bombed by the Arabs, and a shell remained. And there was a period of time before it was completely razed. And then, while it was still standing, then the Arabs came in and did to the Churva what they did later again in Gaza after the shuls there were abandoned. But there was that period of time where the bima was still there. It was, and you could walk by and see there are some pictures of it. They're hard to find, but there is documentary evidence that it wasn't destroyed completely all at once. So the same thing happened with the Beit HaMikdash. The building burned, but the Mizbeach was still there. And there are several opinions that Rabban Gamliel continued to offer the Korban Pesach on that Mizbeach until after the Merit of Bar Kokhba, then Har HaBayit was completely razed and plowed over. But there was that in-between time. The Netziv talks about it in Devarim also, that there was this in-between kind of time. So this aspect of Pesach is kind of downplayed in the Haggadah. We don't really see that. But Rabban Gamliel's position is commemorated by what we say at the end, Rabban Gamliel haya omer kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu ba-Pesach, that this is really, he went to great lengths to preserve this aspect of Pesach, the Karban, rather than the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, as the central avoda of the evening. And we remember that. Because ultimately, just as the students of Rabbi Akiva reminded their teachers that intellectual understanding has its limits and really has to be rooted in absolute emunah, so too spiritual inspiration and the inspiration of all the inspiration that we derive from the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim has to be rooted in practice. And we don't separate that idea of spiritual inspiration from the performance of the mitzvot. Both Rabbi Akiva and Rabban Gamliel are important models for our own Seder. We look for the inspiration, but we can't forget or ignore the performance of the mitzvot, the practice of the mitzvot. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, in his Haggadah, suggests another possible explanation for Rabban Gamliel's absence very beautifully. You don't have this on the sheet, but it's in an essay. If you have his Haggadah, it's on the one side, it's the Haggadah with little Divrei Torah on the bottom, and then on the flip side, there are essays. So one of the essays, he talks about this Ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer and where the difference, what's going on between Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah and Rabban Gamliel. And he suggests that this Seder took place during the time that Rabban Gamliel was deposed as the Nasi. There was a period of time where Rabban Gamliel, because of the very harsh stance he took against those who disagreed with him in Machloket, was deposed as Nasi, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi in his stead. So he says this is when it took place. And the goal of the Chachamim gathering together in Bnei Brak was to create a paradigm of unity among people even when they disagreed. So you have at this Seder, sitting at this Seder, people who disagreed on matters of halacha. On the one hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Eliezer held, even with regard to Pesach, that the Korban Pesach had to be eaten by midnight, whereas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yoshua held that the Korban Pesach could be eaten until Alot HaShachar. Despite that disagreement, they all sat together and it's the home of Rabbi Akiva, so they adopted his practice, and the others willingly, or not so willingly, Rabbi Sachs suggested that they weren't so aware of it, that they sort of lost themselves in the telling of the story, but even when they realized that the time period that they would have said, deadline, had passed, they understood. The goal of this Seder was to promote Achdut, was to promote unity, to promote the mindset in a time when, again, these are people among whom there are witnesses to the Churban. And what was the cause of the Churban, Churban Bayit Sheni? Sinat Chinam. So in a generation in which Sinat Chinam had been so prevalent, their goal was to be a model of unity, to say that we can disagree, but we can still get along. And again, La'avonoteinu harabim, we can still, that's still a very, very relevant teaching, that it's not, we may disagree, but we can all sit down and eat together, and we can all sit down and find some common ground in our common story. We're running out of time, but I did include on the source sheet some ideas about a passage that occurs later in the Haggadah in which not all of the same, but some of the same Tanaim are discussed, are cited having a discussion about the number of Makot, and there is a Gematria there. I know we're not being Gematrias, but I like Gematrias. So for those of you who can find a Gematria inspiring and want to enjoy the Gematria of the Hagyanei Halacha, you can explore it there. And Rav Rimon, the last source is also from the Haggadah of Rav Rimon, and he sees in the discussion of the Makot, and there's a suggestion that this is the kind of thing that perhaps the Chachamim were discussing at the Seder in Bnei Brak, the attention to detail and the message of every detail and every aspect of Yetziat Mitzrayim. There's that whole puzzling discussion. There were 10 Makot. No, there were 50 Makot. There were 60 Makot. There were 250 Makot. Everybody's like, what's going on here? So the discussion there really is because there's a pasuk that says that Hashem tells Bnei Israel, I will not bring upon Am Yisrael all the Makot that I brought upon the Mitzrayim in Mitzrayim. So there's a desire to sort of multiply the number of Makot that were in Mitzrayim, because the more Makot there were in Mitzrayim, the fewer Makot that Hashem can bring upon us. So he says, Rav Rimon, this is just a beautiful example of the great love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for the Jewish people. And we want to extend that love and focus on that love. So we are inspired on the Seder night, not only by the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim itself, but by how the story is told by our great leaders, who themselves found inspiration in one another, despite their differences, in applying the lessons of the amazing and miraculous events of Yetziat Mitzrayim to the night of the exile in which both they and we are still experiencing. The beautiful thing about this Seder is, you know, when Rav Soloveitchik talks about qualitative time consciousness, that we're really tapping into, we're reliving the same moment. When we celebrate, time is not linear. Time is not only moving in one direction, but there's almost like a meeting of generations when we sit down at the Seder night, and we're reliving these same experiences. So we are inspired by the Seder of those who came before us, and we hope to transmit that excitement, that same excitement of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Harei Ani Kiven Shivim Shana, and wow, I now understand something, I learned something new, even at my advanced age. So we hope to be inspired in the same way, and that we see at our Seder a manifestation of the great love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, and can only hope and pray that this year's Avodah will culminate with a restoration of the Karban Pesach and the realization of the ultimate Nechama that was foretold by Rabbi Akiva. B'mhei Rabbi Aminu, Amin.